Call the tax committee meeting to order. The chair will move House File 785 and move the delete all amendment 792 to House File 785. As amended, yes. Okay. I'm sorry. The 792 delete all amendment as amended. Members, we have some additional amendments this morning. Representative Conan moves the 830 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What this amendment does is provide a tax credit for installation of E85 fuel dispensing equipment. It's a one-time credit of 50% of the cost of installing the fuel dispensing equipment for E85 fuel. It's got a maximum credit of $2,000. The money comes from the charitable contributions in the AMT.
What's the, do we have a fiscal note, Mr. Michael? Or someone?
I'll refer to, I think the fiscal staff have worked the numbers out so they balance. But
Ms. Manzi, do we have what a cost for this amendment is?
Just to chair members of the committee, Paul Wilson and I worked on making this balance last night, and his understanding, the way the credit would work is that...
Ms. Manzi, why don't you come to the table if we're going to get into a rather lengthy description of the fiscal impact.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I see Dr. Wilson is here, so he may come up and help me with this, but what he worked out based on the bill that Representative Heidgerken had and the revenue estimate for that, which allowed a $20,000 credit and it was refundable. This amendment that Representative Coonan is offering limits the credit to 50% of the first $4,000 of actual expenses for installing this equipment and makes the credit non-refundable and allows a 15-year carry forward. And what the cost of that would be $600,000 per year for each of the 4 years that we're looking at on the tracking sheets. To pay for that, Representative Coonan's amendment returns the AGI floor and the charitable contribution subtractions and the alternative minimum tax to 1% in tax year 06, which falls in fiscal 07. And then it lowers that percentage to 0.4% in tax year 07 and 0.3% in tax year 08, which are fiscal 08 and 09. And that leaves on the bottom line in the 06-07 biennium 0 and in the 08-09 biennium $260,000. And those figures are not for the whole bill, but rather for just this amendment.
I'm sorry, Ms. Menzie. I'm just trying to look through the language here. Could you just apologize? Give me the numbers once again.
The numbers for the whole thing?
Just give me the numbers for the cost of the credit for dispensing the for installing the E85 dispensing equipment.
$600,000 per year for each of the 4 years.
And, Mr. Michael, do we have any other provisions where we have a 15-year carry forward?
Mr. Chairman, the R&D credit also has a 15-year carry forward, and that is a pretty standard carry forward for federal business tax credits. But the only business tax credit that we have is the general R&D credit, other than the jobs EM.
Representative Knobloch,
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess, you know, I got in here a little bit late. Sorry about that. But, gee, I keep seeing the Knobloch Amendment come up on all these amendments. So is the effect of this that it delays the... is the effect that it just deals with the AMT and the Chapman decision, or does it also deal with the education tax credit?
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, it only amends the AGI floor on the alternative minimum tax, charitable contribution subtraction in the Chapman decision. It does not deal with the provisions of your amendment that related to the K-12 education credit.
Okay, thank you. I just wasn't sure what page 2, lines 9 and 10 was there. Well, you know, I guess if we add this in, I suppose we can bring back the communist gas pricing amendment.
Hey, I resemble both of Mark.
We won that one.
Representative Knobloch fell alone.
Okay. Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I think that... you know, charitable contributions are more important than contributions to Holiday, Standard Oil, and some of the other multinationals that Representative Coonan appears to have an affinity for right now. I don't think that that's what the motivations of the amendment are, but, you know, in truth, that's who's going to be getting the money. I would prefer to see our charities benefit from it and would recommend a no vote. You know, you know, the government passes mandates every day on business. You know, we passed the mandate, Representative Rukavina, on business earlier this week. And we didn't offer businesses a tax credit because they have to readjust how they pay their workers. I don't know why, simply because there has to be a new pump that we have to, again, reward big business with, you know, with the subsidy of this nature.
Well, Mr. Chair, just have some other individuals. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate Representative Cohen bringing this forward. You know, we've been trying to get more E85s dispensers out there, and there's not certainly enough. In fact, I think in one of the committee hearings we had a map of kind of where they were, and this certainly would help take care of some of that added expense and so forth. And I understand certainly what Representative Abrams is saying on the charitable, but this also is certainly helps the ethanol industry and ultimately the state and the economy in rural Minnesota. And I think it's good that Representative Conan is looking to help his rural communities. So I would support this amendment.
Okay, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I love this amendment, but not here and not today. And I'd like to explain why. Number one, we did more for ethanol than has ever been done in the history of the world yesterday with the passage of Senate File 4, the Dallas C. Sams E-20 ethanol bill. I would also say that in the ag bill, in the ag finance bill, if you voted for that, which I know a lot of you did, we have provisions such as this in that bill, and we also have in saving, and we want to keep this going, in saving the ethanol tails, This is one area where that money can be used. So we're moving forward. But I'm not going to support. I mean, I am Mr. Ethanol. I got to run through my veins. My middle name's value added. But I have to tell you that this is not the way to do it. This is not the way to do it. Not at the expense of charitable contributions. Not at the expense of our charities. Members, please vote this down. We are taking care of this in other ways. We have other avenues for this. This is not the day to do this. We have E85. We have more E85 pumps in Minnesota than the rest of the country combined. And we're going to continue with that, and we're going to have more E85 pumps. But let's do it in the ag bill, the ag finance bill, where it belongs, not taking away from our charities that are supporting our neediest of our needy. So I would recommend a no vote. This is the wrong day, the wrong time. We will get more 85 pumps out there, and I certainly agree with what Representative Cohen is trying to do, but not at the expense of charities and not today.
Okay, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Abrams, I don't think Representative Cohen is trying to...
play more meat?
Is trying to help the, you know, British Petroleum or... Marathon Oil. I think
what his intention was, to help those small dealers. I'm sure that Representative Simpson's got a gas station, too. He's got everything else. So
to that point, yes, I do. And if I decide that there is enough need and enough demand for it, I will pay for a pump and put it in.
Well, so we're trying, and that's who he's trying to help out. And there, you know, I've got a lot of small dealers in my area, Skelcos and Phil Saltwine, that have four or five different convenience store gas stations. I think that's the intent of this. You know, as far as this charitable thing, last night, Representative Dabney, I believe it was, tried to help out those that don't itemize, that give deductions. And Representative Abrams, you mentioned that a lot of these people aren't that high income. But Mr. Michaels has claimed that they're higher income people that are going to benefit from your amendment. Maybe there's a better way to fund this. You didn't leave us much on the bottom line, Representative Knobloch and others yesterday. But I think the intent of it is noble anyhow, and I don't think this is trying to help multinational.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The language in the bill allows one pump per owner to be eligible for the credit. However, if there's a franchise, it would be one pump in each case there, too. The intention of this isn't, of course, to help the big holiday stations or any of those. The intention really is to promote the ethanol production in Minnesota.
Very good.
If, Mr. Chairman, I'd like a roll call on this also.
Representative Conan requests a roll call. Representative Conan, I don't own a gas station, and I have no idea what it costs to install a pump. Can you enlighten committee members as to what it costs to put in an E85 pump?
Is Mr. Bob Krogman here?
Mr. Is there someone, anyone in the audience who can enlighten us?
Okay.
Maybe we need to, Representative Simpson, since you're our local entrepreneur, do you give us any context of what it costs to put in a pump?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you can probably put in a single station like that for anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 for one unit. So, and then if you have to put a tank, I suppose you're looking at another $20,000. So $25,000. Top in.
Representative Simpson, is it possible that you could take and convert an existing pump to an E85 pump?
Absolutely. You could take one of your pumps and convert it today if you so choose.
And what would it cost to convert a pump?
Probably $2. Less than, you know, $200 to $300. The finding would be the main thing.
You still need the tank.
You'd use one of your existing tanks and just eliminate one of your product lines. And if I felt that this would be that much more advantageous to handle an E85 over a premium, I probably would make that decision. In the past, some of us have handled diesel, and we've decided that it didn't pay, so we went to upgrade to a premium fuel instead of a diesel. So.
But, Mr. Chairman, I won't let you put the sign up.
We took care of that Ways and Means last night. Yeah.
I think the transportation bill might be coming to the floor next week. We could take care of that. Representative Clinton, so why do we want to? I don't again, Representative Clinton, can you explain why we want to provide these types of subsidies to huge corporations?
Again, Mr. Chairman, it's not my intention to provide in the huge corporations. Like I said, the bill provides one pump per owner, so there's a definite limit on it. And the intention is to, there are areas in Minnesota where there are very few E85 pumps, and to get them out there to make the fuel available.
Anyway, further discussion? Further discussion? Okay. For the members who just came in the room, we are on the A30 amendment, Representative Conan, which provides a credit for installation of E85 fuel dispensing equipment. Takes the money from the AMT charitable contribution provisions. And there's a roll call requested. The clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Abrams.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Atkins.
Aye.
Bernardi. Broad.
No.
David.
No.
Dabney.
Aye.
De La Forest.
No.
Dill.
Aye.
Dorman.
No.
Earhart. House.
No.
Yarros.
Aye.
Knobloch.
No.
Coonan.
Aye.
Coles. Lanning.
No.
Linchevsky.
Aye.
Flesch.
Aye.
Marquardt.
Yes.
Mullery.
Aye.
Nelson.
No.
Frukavina.
Yes.
Sieben.
Yes.
Simpson.
I like the idea, but no.
Vandeveer.
No.
Westerberg. Westerberg.
Excuse.
Zellers.
No. False votes no.
You voted for the show.
There being 12 ayes and 14 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Thanks, Steve.
Next, Representative Abrams moves the A97 amendment.
Members, the A97 amendment is being offered on behalf of Representative Bernardi. There's a unique provision in the Fridley City Charter that limits how they're able to levy based upon some of the aid adjustments that have been made. This has been carried for in order to allow the Fridley City Council to be able to levy the amount that they need to levy for municipal services, their city charter amendment, and notwithstanding. In our review of this in the past, Fridley was the only city that had this very unique provision in their city charter, and hopefully when Fridley has the opportunity to vote on a charter amendment, legislation like this won't be necessary to encourage a yes vote.
Chairman.
Further discussion. Representative Lynchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank Representative Abrams for offering this for Representative Bernardi.
Any further discussion? Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of the A97 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those who are opposed, the motion fails and the amendment is adopted.
Looking for it.
Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're trying to locate an amendment here.
If there's no objection, perhaps we could move to adopt the delete all amendment to the House File 785 as amended. Thank you, sir. This isn't the vote on. This is the vote on the amendment, so that we'd have just the bill as amended in front of us. We can still continue to work on amendments, Representative Lynchesky. So the chair would move that we adopt the 792 amendment to House File 785 as amended. So, members, this would just be, as I said, technically to get the bill into the order in which we can proceed on additional amendments. Any further discussion? Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of the 792 delete all amendment to House File 785 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those who are opposed.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, while Representative Mullery is getting organized here, as this amendment is coming out, I do want to just make a comment because I know there haven't been passed out yet, and that is to thank all the committee members who have worked with the minority here, and I'm sure you feel the same way. I do believe this is the last CFL amendment, and there might be something I don't know about, but I think I can say this is the last CFL amendment here today. And I just wanted to say thanks for the time. And I'm hoping you don't have any more either, Mr. Chair.
I have no more amendments, and I hope we've allowed members an opportunity to discuss any issues that they've chosen to or make amendments freely to put either bring issues forward of concern or to work to further the cause of their constituency. So, Representative Mullery, you ready to proceed on the A-82 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, just getting adjustment on figures from staff.
That's fine.
Is this one?
We went to White Castle last night at 12:30. Sliders, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I should have stuck with beef jerky. Oh, those combined with sliders, man. I felt much better than Mark.
Representative Mullery.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
That's fine.
Can you get those runs handed out?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Luchesi.
Representative Mullery is waiting for some runs to be handed out. So if I could just take 1 second on one more process note. I did forget that, and this would just be what you want to do. The Representative Dabney had an amendment that... Could I just ask Representative Dabney to... I think we debated the amendment, and then last night we laid it over.
Representative Dabney, I mean, my recollection of some of these things is a little blurry, but Representative Dabney, you have an amendment?
Mr. Chair, fair enough. Members may recall last evening I put forward an amendment that I can't find anymore that...
We hit it.
So if we're fully informed and ready to vote, let's go. That would have moved us forward on the Chapman situation, the Chapman case compared to current law, but also would have increased the percentage of charitable deductions for non-itemizers from the current 50% to 75%. And we were doing that at the... Thank you very much. We were doing that at the... more at 11:59 last night when we recessed, right. And we did not vote on it.
Yes,
it's the A100 amendment. Staff has been good enough to hand it to me.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
It's here in my pile anyway.
Very good.
So, Representative Devney, you want to offer? We need to return to your amendment, okay?
If we could, Mr. Chair, thank
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Representative Mullery, to the A-82 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, the A-82 amendment is a true commitment to local government aid. It's a total of more than $63 million more than in the bill that's in front of us. It puts in an extra $46 million over the current law into LGA. It reinstates the money that was taken out in the bill from Minneapolis-St. Paul and Duluth. It deletes the taconite tax inclusion on the ability to pay, and it puts $35 million of new money onto the formula, so everyone with LGA gains on this. At the same time, this amendment is closing a tax loophole that has led to large abuses just like Representative Lanning's amendment, we need to get at some of the tax avoidance schemes that are cheating the state of money. The foreign operating operating corporation income exemption has cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars over the years. And if you don't think this is a problem, look at the fact that the money the state lost to FOCs rose almost 160% in the last couple of years. That's a pretty good indication that they're using this to, they finally caught on to using this to manipulate the dollars that they have to pay the state. They're setting up these tax shelters to hide income from the taxation, and the department has even had, which really surprised me, they've even had questions if you could set up a corporation as an FOC and not even have any employees in the foreign country. That kind of looks to me like it's a tax shelter. This amendment disallows that exemption for things like dividends, capital gains, interest, and other things that aren't really income, and it takes those out of the ongoing operation. It requires the 80% of the foreign property and payroll, and this amendment does not go after the royalties as the Senate does, because I understand that the chamber and the business partnership are concerned about the royalties provision. And members, there is a I think the runs are they're just being handed out. Everyone gains well under this if you're getting LGAA. Basically, I think that that's pretty much the amendment. I'm not sure if people have questions. I assume there might be a little discussion.
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess a couple of thoughts occur to me on this. And in the first place, with the amendment we adopted of Representative Lanning's, we have taken a pretty good swipe at corporate tax loopholes. That amendment raises $40 million. Some comes from individual tax loopholes, but certainly this bill, as amended, makes a very significant effort in going after corporations that are abusing tax loopholes. So I would say that first. But as I understand the amendment, it appears to me we're raising $63 million of tax revenue and then spending $63 million on LGA. Representative Mullery, is that the case?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Just may I forgot one thing. Is that okay, Representative?
Sure, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, just to get it in the shape that the author wanted, there was a technical amendment that staff came up with. It's the A88 amendment. Just says except for AIDS payable in 2006, and I would just adopt that as part of my amendment.
Representative Mullery incorporates the A88 amendment into the A82 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Knobloch. Go ahead and with the clerk.
Well, thank you,
Representative Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, well, then, members, I guess I'm not rising to a point of order yet, but as I look at this, you know, where we are with the bill now, according to the spreadsheet, is we are in a situation where we could raise an additional $20 million and spend an additional $20 million in LGA underneath the House budget resolution, the targets we have, but we can't be doing $63 million. I mean, $63 million would basically throw us out of balance and violate the target resolution, as I understand it.
Mr. Chairman, may I answer?
Representative,
and it could be best done by staff if Representative Knobloch would prefer the best explanation, but basically the money from the FOC is put into a special fund and then that's used to pay it, and according to staff that is proper under our rules. If you want to question it, I think the staff can explain it much better than I can, the technicalities of the rules and why this fits within them.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, I guess if you're putting it into a special fund, I guess I haven't had a chance to read the whole six-page amendment or whatever it is. I guess if it's going into a special fund that's outside the general fund, that may be okay.
Mr. Chair. I
Representative Mullery.
From my experience on the committee, the tax staff knows what they're doing, I think, on this committee, believe me. And while they've been missing sleep for about 3-4 nights, they finally got some last night, so I think they're alert enough to answer the questions.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mullery, I maybe there's an error in this run here, but as I open it to page 1 and look at the large cities, Edina doesn't get anything. I don't know how you could have left me out. Well, I don't see any reason to vote for this.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, I don't lose anything either, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, you are deep in my heart, Representative Earhart, and we're not taking away anything from you that wasn't taken away previously.
Well, that's, Mr. Chairman, that's certainly a consideration. When you don't get anything, it's hard to take anything away.
Mr. Chair, I think he's saying, Representative Earhart, that you should vote for it because he's not damaging you this time.
Okay. Representative Abrams.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I'm going to, rather than talk about the rules and all that other stuff that we sometimes get bogged down on, I'd like to talk about the merits of Representative Mullery's amendment. I may be the only one who has approached this as a policy matter, but if you, and because this, some of this language has been proposed by the governor on page 2 to require at least $2 million of property and $1 million of payroll outside of the United States. It sounds real good, but maybe somebody can buy me a $2 million villa in Grand Cayman and pay me $1 million, and you know, then that section is met. Now, you know, Representative Mullery, to be fair, I'm about the only one to have ever, you know, voiced concern about that provision and saying it's really not a provision that really does anything. It's kind of a feel-good provision that everybody kind of throws into these into these things for the discussion. So I'll admit that on this on that piece of it, Representative Mullery, that I, even among those who want to do something about this, that I do have a minority opinion. It probably was even included in the 2004 ill-fated tax bill, but you know, I'll raise that as a concern. The second concern, of course, is on the dividends received deduction, and I'd like to give members of the committee a little bit of history. Minnesota went to a unitary income tax on corporations, I believe, in 1988, and the state did a number of things while doing so. We were one of the first states in the nation to go to unitary, but with all the attention on the Senate on whatever they're doing to the to a new top tier on individual income tax, Minnesota has the highest corporate income tax rate in the nation, and by a pretty good margin, 9.9%. In order to get some of our largest employers back in 1988 to agree not to actively oppose going to unitary, there are a variety of things that were written in the statute, foreign operating companies, dividends received, etc., for some of them. And when you take a look at the employer mix in Minnesota, it becomes pretty important to a 3M, to a Cargill, to a Medtronic, I don't mean to pick on Representative Bernardi, but to a host of our largest and best employers. And what this provision does is it is targeted for the dividends received from foreign operating companies. Our dividends received deduction is not allowed on dividends, interest, royalties, capital gains, or like income received by FOCs. You're basically shutting that down. For those of us who are native Minnesotans, we remember when 3M basically moved all their new facilities construction and some of their headquarters facilities from St. Paul or Maplewood area down to Austin, Texas 25 years ago, or almost 28 years ago now. Yesterday, I don't know if the VFL members get this. We get this, the governor's daily schedule. Yesterday, the governor. You know. Honestly, you ought to be on the list so you know where the governor is, because it's basically where his public appearances are. 3M broke ground on their first new facility in Minnesota yesterday, in 23 years, and I think that's really a great day for Minnesota. If we go down the road of provisions like this on dividends received, we're basically telling our largest corporations who are engaged in the global economy in trying to outsource and insource. If you read Tom Friedman's book, The World is Flat, I highly recommend it. You are basically saying to those job creators that Minnesota is closed for business. And I really do believe that there are some solutions to the loophole that particularly some financial institutions are utilizing in the FOC area. This goes far beyond whatever rational solution there would be. And while I have the floor, Mr. Chairman, just one other thing. Everybody talks about fully funding LGA. One last time, and you know, I may be the only one who will continue to say this, the mistake that was made in the formula in 2003 was putting it into a dollar-denominated index. It is a relative needs index. The amount of local government aid is a legitimate argument. Should there be 439? Should there be 839? Should there be $239 million? I think that that's a legitimate argument. But to say that the new formula of and by itself is not fully funded is missing what the formula is. I understand it's a matter of semantics, and it's become almost a political mantra, fully fund LGA. But if there was a mistake made, it was not doing it in index terms rather than in relative dollar terms. With that, I'll end.
Representative Anderson requests a roll call on the Mullery Amendment. The Representative Markworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, for the benefit of the members, if Ms. Dalton would just go through the runs and what this amendment actually does, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the cover sheet for the run actually gives you a pretty good indication of what is actually happening. If you look at the points, and it shows the changes from current law, not the changes from the formula that's in this proposal, but the changes from current law. So essentially, it eliminates the things that are not in current law, that are in the current Delete Everything Amendment. But it continues to contain the small city formula cliff adjustment that was introduced by Cornish, Representative Cornish. It has Representative Nelson's Taylor's Falls adjustment. It removes taconite aid, as proposed by Representative Rukavina, from the ability to raise revenue measure. It removes caps and annual increases for pay 2006, and we need to do this to spend the additional amount that's put in this bill. And it increases the pay 2006 appropriation to $482.8 million, which is $45 million above current law and $63 million above what is in the Delete Everything Amendment. The $419 million in 2006 and $437 million in 2007 continues to come from the general fund, and the remainder comes from the Property Tax Relief Fund, which is funded with the new FOC money. It pays 90% of unmet need, and any city that currently is not getting what the formula says they should get is moved up to, because of the caps that exist in current law, are moved up onto the formula amount. If you're trying to read the run and go to page one, I would actually start with column three. That is what we are projecting in LGA in current law. page one of the run. Column three is, that's the projection under current law. Column four is the projection of LGA under this amendment. And so five shows you the change from 05 to 06 under this amendment. Column six shows you the change from current law 06 to 06 under this amendment. And column seven is the gain on a per capita basis due strictly to this bill. For this amendment.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry. It was Representative Marquardt that asked the question. I apologize. Representative Marquardt, you have the floor.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Dalton, for going through that. And I, you know, if we're serious about property tax relief, what this amendment does is eliminates the dismantling that's occurred in the last 2 and 3 years, and including with the proposed amendment or a bill that we have here, in that, first of all, it does away with the local option sales tax offset, does away with that, eliminates the $17.5 million cut that's proposed in this bill, and in fact replaces that and adds 40-some million more, but also does away with the taconite aid offset, which was something done back in 2003, and goes a long way in restoring the $150 million that we had cut back in 2003. This does that. It returns integrity back to the property tax relief program. And if we are serious about property tax relief, which I know the chairperson is here, this is the way to go. It goes along with the formula that we set back in 2003, whether or not we agree with it or not. It goes back to that. But I really think that the current, what we have here with the shifting and the redistribution, not only dismantles, but for rural members may very much be a bait and switch that we saw back in 2001 when we saw significant property tax relief aid granted to us, and then $150 million of property tax relief being taken away from rural Minnesota. So members, look at this very closely. I think this protects property tax relief into the future for cities around this state.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't want to get it off because this is an important, very important LGA issue. And Representative Abrams, I don't think the governor seems to be terribly interested that we get his schedule, but with regard to your comment about the $2 million not enough, and that I believe is part of the governor's package, I thought, but I would agree that that probably isn't, but it's an awful lot better than present when we have questions for our Department of Revenue as to whether they even have to have anybody there or any property. This is a big improvement on that. My understanding, and I think there's two parts to this on the royalties. The royalties in this is to the FOC. It's not the, and you may understand that, but I think you might have confused maybe somebody here.
I understood.
The royalties to the corporations in Minnesota are not part of this one. That's in the Senate bill, but not in this. And what I've been told is that's the real big concern of those corporations, is that the royalties part of the Senate bill. But there is a lot of concern also about the outsourcing. But and then I want to go to the fact that I did not say anything, Representative Abrams, about full funding LGA. I did not say that. I'm talking in dollars, and I think everything I said in dollars is accurate because Ms. Dalton had it, and I've never seen her wrong yet.
We have Representative Dorman, Representative Atkins, Representative Abrams, Representative Nunley.
Pick me up, please.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. going back to Representative Abrams' comments about fully funded, he makes a very good point that it depends on how you look at it. And what I've always tried to look at is I thought the new formula maybe wasn't perfect, but it was an improvement over the old formula. City where I come from, Elbert Lee, benefited tremendously under the old formula because of the grandfather, but frankly, hard to defend. I think the new formula, well, again, not perfect. Most parts of it are defensible. It makes some sense, and it gets us on a stable footing. But the question is not what is, you know, by the formula fully funded, but what I look for is the formula defines need throughout the cities in the state. And if you then take a look at the effective tax rate in those communities to fill that need, and if they're similar, probably, from my view, I'd call it fully funded. If they're all over the board, I don't think we've quite done our job. After that, in a city like Elbert Lee or, I'll go to North Oaks because I don't want to make anybody mad. In a city, Elbert Lee versus North Oaks, say if we wanted to build a pool, as a percentage of property tax, it's going to cost us a lot more. And it should. We don't have the base, but we're above the need. That's our own doing. We don't have any business coming here asking folks to support that. In a community like North Oaks, the percentage of increase required to build that same facility would be quite a bit smaller because of the property tax base. That's I think, what that LGA formula is intended to do. How much money you put into it determines, after putting in looking at the need formula, what the relative property tax rates are throughout the state. In 2003, I don't know what fully funding would have been or how that would be defined, but if you look at those property tax rates, and I apologize, members, I don't have them, they were still pretty erratic. If I look at the bill, Representative Krenke, and this time I actually do legitimately want to apologize to you. I was really frustrated this morning on the floor, and I did not handle myself very well, and I sincerely apologize for that in my comments. And I don't mean to, I know members on my side of the aisle think I'm always going after Republicans, but I am very frustrated in the manner in which you put the bill together by the lack of inclusion. And you've made it very difficult for us as a member of the tax committee to do certain things. I don't know if this is the fix. Frankly, I think it goes too far. I don't know that we realistically can get that much money into LGA this year, but what you're doing in it regarding Minneapolis and St. Paul is punitive. I'll leave it there. But it's very frustrating because it's hard to get it out because of the rules in which we live under. It's hard to take that out without, you know, creating a very complicated amendment. And so I hope you understand the frustration that I feel coming from that lack of inclusion in what whether you think it's a good bargaining chip when you go in against the Senate. But if it's not real and it looks as bad as it looks, I don't know that it's really worth a lot. Representative Marquardt made comments and referred to talked about the 2001 tax bill when we were given additional aid and then had it taken away in 2003, and I think he referred to it as the bait and switch. I'm not sure that that's how I'd characterize it very strong. I sure understand why he would say that, but I hope to members on this side of the aisle, at least from my view, based on what happened in 2001 and 2003, does make it hard to trust. And so and then when I see what's happening here in LGA and the cities of the first class, it doesn't do a lot, Representative Pinky, to help me want to be a team player or want to trust based on that. And so, you know, I support the amendment. I think it goes too far, but I think it goes to the point of one of the big problems that I see in the bill. And I say that with all respect. Chairman Krenke, we can just agree to disagree. And I'm not picking on one political party or another, but I just think it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Representative Dorman. Again, we all get frustrated at times with many, many things that go on here. I've certainly been, I think, in your situation, or had high levels of frustration about what happens in this process. I said earlier, think when we started with the delete all amendment that I apologize to members about not having an inclusionary process that I would have preferred to follow along the way, but we have a very disparate group here in the tax committee representing a great deal of different interests and different constituencies with some differences in philosophy of how we get from point A to point B. Let me just, I haven't brought this up before, but I will bring it up now. Under the provisions of increased sales tax in the bill, the LGA offset an increase in local option sales tax for Minneapolis-St. Paul, I would be, my company is located in the city of St. Paul. I purchased probably something in the vicinity north of $750,000 worth of materials a year. I would be subject to paying probably somewhere between $5,000 and maybe $7,500 additional tax if the city of St. Paul instituted an additional half-cent sales tax. So if anybody thinks that I come out ahead under this proposal, I come out behind in this proposal from a personal standpoint. So I'm doing this because I think it is a legitimate way to go. Now, I don't necessarily believe that, obviously there are many other people around this table that disagree with that, but I legitimately do believe if we are going to allow cities to have additional local option sales taxes that there should be some equality in that process and that there should be an offset with regard to local government aid. This may not be the perfect solution in some people's minds. It may not be a solution at all. But members, again, this is a difficult proposal to put together. I think we all understand that. So, again, Representative Dorman, I empathize with your frustration and with the difficulties that you face trying to represent your constituents. And I don't in any way, shape, or form say this is a perfect solution. It is just one proposed solution. And I have no idea what may happen as we go forward to the floor, let alone what may happen when we get to conference committee, because as we know, the Senate has a very different direction in which they've gone with the tax, their proposed tax bill in this 2005 session. So, further discussion to the Mullery Amendment. Representative Lesch.
Well, just based on this, I was wondering, Mr. Chair, if I could have Joel go over the revenue now. This is my first year on the committee, and I did have some questions about some of the items on that.
Who on staff, Mr. Michael, you want to give us a quick run through on the revenue note?
Chairman, members of the committee, if you look at this actually is a revenue estimate for the Senate bill, and it includes more items than are what are in Representative Mullery's amendment. But if you look at it, the top line, which refers to foreign operating corporation change, those are the provisions that are in Representative Mullery's bill. He has two provisions, basically the governor's recommendation, which is contained in Section 1, as Representative Abrams referred to, and that establishes thresholds for qualifying as an FOC. And the second provision is the change in the treatment of under what's called the deemed dividends rule that disqualifies intangible income, such as interest, royalties, capital gains, so forth, of the FOC from qualifying for the deemed dividend deduction, which is a 80% exclusion. Those two provisions in combination yield that revenue increase of $63.3 million. in fiscal year 06, and then it drops to 47.2. And the reason for the drop is simply because of the effective date. Most income and corporate franchise tax, our convention is that we start them on a taxable year basis, so you get in the first fiscal year. If you make it effective for tax year 05, which is what this does, you pick up a year and a half in the first fiscal year, and so that's why the revenue drops that way. And just to sort of close the circle, the foreign royalty provision that Representative Mullery referred to, which is not in his amendment, is the second line on that estimate for the Senate bill. And you can see that the magnitude of that is just slightly larger than these FOC changes. That does affect FOCs because FOCs, when they pay foreign royalties, that those royalties, when they're received by the recipient corporation, qualify for that foreign royalty subtraction. But it's the subtraction of the recipient, not of the FOC, and so that's sort of why it's, you know, denominated as a not part of the FOC provision.
Would you say then, based on that, then, Mr. Michael, that Representative Mueller's amendment is financially sound?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesch, this is the Department of Revenue's best estimate of the amount of revenue that this will raise. It's gone up significantly from what the previous estimate, because it's my understanding they have a new data set that shows higher amounts of these deemed dividend deductions, essentially. And I can't say anything more than it's the Revenue Department's best estimate of what this would yield, and I have no reason to doubt it.
Further questions, Representative Lynch?
No, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I guess, based on your remarks earlier, I should thank you for including Democrats just as much as Republicans. based on the discussion the other day when we had the Lanning Amendment, I think everybody around the table agrees that we need compliance with respect to tax shelters. And Representative Lanning used greater compliance with respect to the tax shelter that he referred to in order to fund getting off of the property tax freeze. I also think that it probably goes unquestioned on either side of the table that there is abuse with respect to foreign operating corporations. Yet there are also people that use it for very legitimate purposes. My question, I believe, would be for Mr. Michael, and that is there a way, we're going to obviously be talking about foreign operating corporations for a while here, is there a way to get at the abuse without getting at the folks that are using it appropriately? And I still have a memo that you sent out in May of last year talking about how there's certain folks that don't even have any employees outside. I think you referenced banks in that regard, that were making great use of it and basically end-arounding what was designed for, I think, a good reason. Simple question, how do we get at the bad actors without taking the tool away from everybody? In 30 seconds or less, because we're going to be done by one.
Yes or no?
Yes or no? Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, that's very difficult to answer because it's sort of, first of all, I don't think there's any simple answer as to how to eliminate the abuse of or perceived abuses in the FOC world. If there were, the legislature probably would have done it, you know, several years ago. I think there's sort of divergent opinions about exactly, first of all, what the provision was designed to achieve, and then secondly, what's administrable in how to cut back on it. It seems to me, anyway, obvious that there needs to be a better test of true foreignness, but people not, you know, you talk to some other people and they won't even agree on that, but one of the the problems with the FOC provision is the problem that's the same problem that states that do not use unitary apportionment have, and that's through setting up a separate corporation, and in Minnesota requires qualifying that corporation as an FOC. But by doing that, you can artificially shift income through transfer pricing between your regular corporations and the FOC that shifts income into the FOC. And because of the way we define foreignness under the FOC rules, you really doesn't even have to have foreign income to qualify. And doing that, you essentially get an 80% discount on your tax. And that's what opens this provision up to abuse. But the art of this, obviously, is to come up with a way that successfully stops that, but still gives the tax treatment to the many Minnesota companies that have extensive foreign operations and have the Minnesota tax does not really recognize fully their expenses and operations in apportioning their income absent some sort of adjustment. And so that's the dilemma that I think all of you policymakers are in trying to figure out how to deal with this.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Atkins.
I won't belabor that any further. I'll get cracking on that over the weekend then if you come back to you.
Okay. Representative Mullery?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, and I think I tried to recognize that by leaving the operating income in, which I think is probably the legitimate part of this. We're getting at the most blatant examples, and I think when you look at the tremendous acceleration in the application, what's going on, there's something going on that's not just legitimate business here. I think that's pretty clear.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, let me try to help Representative Atkins out a little bit.
With his homework assignment this weekend?
And talk about the Mueller Amendment. I don't view this as the listed transaction list kept by the Internal Revenue Service, and you know, we can get into that at greater length and probably not now. But let me give you an example of who gets hit by this amendment. Assume that you are a large multinational corporation and you have partners, okay? And you set up a foreign operating corporation in order to own real property, hypothetically, in Japan.
Cayman Island.
Representative Ruka, being a real-life situation, and I know of, in which a large Minnesota employer is in a joint venture and has a foreign operating corporation in Japan in which they have minority partners in which they own all the real estate for their operations in Japan. Okay? They only have one or two employees for this FOC, even though they control several tens of millions of dollars worth of property in Japan. Under the Mullery Amendment, if this corporation sold its interest in that FOC or sold some of the real estate in the FOC and they wanted to upstream the money because it would be a capital gain, that income would be taxed at the Minnesota corporate income tax rate. Quite frankly, I don't think that that's fair. I don't think that it's fair simply because you are a Minnesota employer who's engaged in a joint venture in Japan in which one of the pieces of the joint venture is to own property that you may buy or sell, that A, you fall under the employee and payroll number in the amendment, but B, if you decide to sell property in Japan, that you end up paying the full Minnesota income tax rate. As a matter of fact, there is an argument that Minnesota already would treat that taxpayer worse than most other states because you do tax 20% of the dividends received. In most other states, that tax rate would be zero or the capital gains on that. Most other states, Representative Mullery, the rate would be zero. So that just gives you a flavor of you can design all sorts of schemes in which the law is abused. I will stipulate to that. But for every example of abuse you can come up with, I can come up with 10 in which the transaction is perfectly legitimate that we as a state want to encourage, and they get absolutely nailed with provisions like this. And if there was an easy answer, members, if there was even a hard answer, I think that given the time and the brain power put in on this thing, we would have found a solution. We're still struggling to find a solution, and hopefully we'll find one during the 2005 session.
Well, to that point, Representative Mullery.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, everything we do here is not perfect in everybody's mind, and there may be situations. Representative Abrams, I understand what you're saying about, but there's other arguments I understand also. And believe, I certainly don't. I don't know Minnesota tax law that well. I don't know other states, but my understanding is just like we found on the R&D credit, you know, something that you can say this is different from another state, well, then you start looking down at the other factors. And I've heard that Minnesota is at least as good for the companies or better than other states, many other states, for different. And believe me, I can't explain the technicalities of the different taxes of the different states, but that's all. We can come up with arguments why anything we do here is wrong. There's no question that there's a lot of what I think is, I call fraud, or maybe it's not technical, legal fraud. I will give you that. No, it's not got the, what is it, 9 or 11 elements of common law fraud. But I just think we've got to look at the situation that do we protect what Representative Lanning did. There's probably some in there that are legitimate, too. You can say no. I've read articles that say that there is. Who knows? We're looking at the issue of what is our tax policy, and we are in need of helping cities, I think. And I think that if you start bogging down our overall policy and what we're trying to do in unique situations, I don't think I think that takes away from what we have. We always have to make decisions, and I think that it's important to look at the needs of cities right now. They're really hurting, and we have to make decisions. I think that the needs of cities right now are more important than a few circumstances that might be good in when they're closing loopholes for a lot of other ones. But
Representative Rooklin.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to get us back to the purpose of this amendment, and we can argue about whether this is the same or different than Representative Lanning's amendment the other night. I think it's parallel. There are parallels you can draw that it's similar to the same thing. I think our own Department of Revenue would agree with us that there are people and corporations that are abusing just abusive to our tax system, Representative Abrams. But the purpose of the amendment is this. Members on both sides of the aisle at this table that have been working on the issue of local government aid and property tax relief. And Representative Abrams, there are communities and school districts that have been raising and raising and raising and raising property taxes since 2001 or 2002. There's been excess levies and there's just, in many places, skyrocketing property taxes. And I've seen it, I believe, a few years ago, Albert Lea was already at 20% increases in their community. So that's what this amendment is about. I think it's a fair approach. And we can talk to death foreign operating issues and tax shelters and everything else, but this amendment is an honest attempt to try and put money into the local government aid system to bring property tax relief back to our communities.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Recovina is right on point there. After church on Sunday, when I go down for coffee and rolls, it's going to be tough to explain why we were not willing to provide some property tax relief for seniors and others, because we were simply just unwilling to look at loopholes or abuses to really state tax shelters. And I've sat here enough to know that if someone really wants to do something, we can find a way to do it, to find where the shelters are and to collect those dollars and so forth. The Department of Revenue is here ready to go when it's a certain type of bill, and when someone else offers one, they may not be so readily available. But the bottom line here is property tax relief. And if you truly want that, I think this is a fair way to go about it. As the spreadsheet shows here, it's not nearly going as far as the Senate does. It's reasonable. And yet, it comes back to providing integrity and solidifies the property tax program that has been the basis and heart and soul of communities around the state and rural Minnesota communities. And I think, members, we could probably find ways not to vote for that, saying we might accidentally hit a corporation that's doing something right. But when I explained that to Catherine at Coffee and Rolls, on, who's a senior citizen who's always there, so we weren't willing to do that because we were afraid to look at abuses and loopholes of big corporations. I don't know if she'll be able to understand that. And
don't bring
nor
it up
should
on
she.
Sunday. Don't bring it up.
Okay, further discussion, Representative Nunn.
Well, briefly, Mr. Chair. Firstly, when Representative Mullery talked about this, he talked about the governor's proposal and how this was here. But I think members need to remember that, if my memory serves me correctly, the governor's proposal on corporate FOCs raised $2.9 million. Representative Mullery's proposal is raising $63 million. So there's an awful lot in here that goes way, way, way beyond the governor's proposal. Secondly, as we mentioned already, we are cracking down on corporate tax loopholes with the amendment that Representative Lanning added. Thirdly, we already have an LGA increase in the bill. I know my community is getting every bit as much of an LGA increase in the bill as Representative Mullery's amendment proposes to give it. And so, members, I think Representative Abrams raises some good points. You know, if we have businesses that are multinational in nature, and we adopt what is being talked about here, where you're fully taxing gains that are made completely in other countries, I'm not sure why a business wouldn't just relocate their headquarters to another country and take their jobs with them. Vote no.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we have to be real careful here, and I really appreciated Representative Atkins pointing out the sensitivity here, that I think all of us want to make sure we collect every dollar that's legitimately due to the state, to the taxpayers of Minnesota. And we need to make sure that, to the extent that there are abuses with foreign operating corporations, that we need to stop those abuses. We need to collect what is rightfully due to us. But we also have to be careful, I think, in terms of what are we doing over against the legitimate use of existing tax law with regard to foreign operating corporations. And I don't think we know enough about that, members, to make a sound judgment at this point in time. And we have not heard from the Department of Revenue. I recall at a tax meeting last year when we dealt with this, or 2 years ago when we dealt with this issue, and again last year, there was a report from the Department of Revenue that they were working to deal with this issue. And Mr. Chairman, I would like to have someone from the Department of Revenue give us an update as a tax committee as to what they are currently doing, what they have been able to put their finger on in terms of this matter. So, Mr. Chairman, I would request that we call on somebody from the Revenue Department to address this issue.
Well, with all due respect, Representative Lanning, I have said to members, because of commitments and because of travel times, that we would certainly want to hear and discuss members' amendments, but at the same time, with respect to schedules, that I said that we would try to adjourn by 1 p.m. So, Representative Lanning, I don't know that the department is going to shed any light on this issue that they haven't previously shed on it, and I don't know that they're going to change anybody's viewpoint of how they may vote on this amendment. But as Representative Atkins pointed out, this is going to be a continuing debate, not only this legislative session, but on into other legislative sessions, because of exactly what we've had here today, is that I think all of us want to legitimately gain tax compliance in every way that we can, but we have to understand that once we change the law here, there are tens of thousands of tax attorneys and corporate attorneys that are going to look to change their operating procedures and policies to take the greatest advantage they can of what the current law situation is. So it's a never-ending process whereby the individuals and the businesses that operate in this state or operate in other states are going to look for opportunities to maximize their bottom line. And it doesn't matter whether it's here or in Japan or in any other part of the United States. So best we can do is try to come forward with what we started out with in this process, and that is a easily understood tax policy that is transparent, that is equitable and understandable to the vast majority of taxpayers. So, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we hear a lot all over the place about property taxes, and those are great discussions. You would often think, based on what we're hearing, that property taxes never went up before 2003 and 2004. But the facts are is that I'm sure property taxes have been going up since the beginning of property taxes. I was going to say the beginning of time. That's probably not accurate. Property taxes have only gone down 6 times over the past 40 years. So Representative Riccovina yesterday talked about all the whole host of reasons why property taxes are going up in terms of the interrelationships between levels of government and things like that. But one thing he didn't mention is the market. There's a real estate market that is increasing values, and valuations are going up, which is also increasing property taxes. And some of the same folks who are showing up at equalization hearings saying their property taxes are too high, or their property, their market value on their house is too high, are also calling their local appraiser and asking them to bump up the valuation on their home so they can borrow against it. So I just, Mr. Chair, want us to add the impact of the market back into this discussion of property taxes. When we're considering what is going on, there's definitely an interrelationship between the state and the local and the federal government and property taxes, but there's also the market, and we can't forget that in the discussion.
Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the Mullery Amendment as amended.
Abrams.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Atkins.
Aye.
Bernardi.
Aye.
Broad.
No.
Davis.
No.
Dabney.
Aye.
De La Forest.
No.
Dill.
Aye.
Dorman.
Yes.
Earhart.
No.
Howes.
No.
Yarros.
Aye.
Knobloch.
No.
Coonan.
Aye.
Coles.
No.
Lanning.
No.
Lincheski.
Yes.
Lesh.
Aye.
Marquardt.
Yes.
Mullery.
Aye.
Nelson.
No.
Riccovina.
Yes.
Sieben.
Yes.
Simpson.
No.
Vandeveer.
No.
Westerberg.
Excuse.
Zellers.
One last no.
Krinke.
No.
We're going to darn ourselves. We're going to
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bernardi.
I'd like to vote no, please.
There being 13 ayes and 15 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Dabney to the A-100 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Batting cleanup today. Which has always been my lucky position, so I'm hoping that overnight people had a chance to sleep on this and warm to the idea. I know I did. This members moves us forward on Chapman for AM folks caught in AMT against current law. It also increases the deduction for non-itemizers who do, frankly, considerable charitable contributions to 75% of their charitable contributions above 500. With that, Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I'd simply ask for a roll call.
Representative Dabney requests a roll call on the A-100 amendment. Representative Abrams, lest we have drifted off with visions of sugar plum fairies in our minds, do you want to give us your rationale once again as to why you believe the Dabney Amendment is not a good idea?
Well, once again, members, one of the ways that you get caught by the alternative minimum tax is by being charitable. And I think it would be surprising to those itemizers that they get caught every year that unless they give more than 1% of their gross income to charities, that they will get subjected to the tax. I think that most charitable organizations would support first the repeal of Chapman and then looking at some expansion of the deduction for non-itemizers, so I'd recommend a no vote.
Further discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Abrams.
No.
Anderson. Atkins.
Aye.
Bernardi.
Aye.
Broad.
No.
David.
No.
Dabney.
Aye.
De La Forest.
No.
Dill.
Aye.
Dorman.
No.
Earhart.
No.
Howes.
No.
Yaros.
Aye.
Knobloch. Coonan.
Aye.
Coles.
No.
Lanning.
No.
Lencheski.
Yes.
Lesh.
Aye.
Marquardt.
Yes.
Mullery.
Aye.
Nelson.
No.
Rukavina.
Yes.
Stevens.
Aye.
Simpson.
No.
Vandeveer.
No.
Westerberg. Sellers.
This time I really mean it. Sorry, Ray.
There being 12 ayes and 15 nays, the motion is not adopted. The amendment does not prevail. The further amendments. Further amendments. The discussion to the bill as amended. Discussion to House File 785 as amended. Any further discussion?
Is there a roll call?
Representative Lencheski, are you requesting a roll call?
Mr. Chairman, is there a roll call on the
bill? There's no roll call.
Oh, you don't want it?
Let's just get this one.
Okay. Further discussion to the bill? Further discussion to the bill? If not, members will move to vote. All those in favor of the recommendation that House File 785, as amended, be recommended to pass and we refer to the Committee on Ways and Means, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those who are opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chairman, can you just briefly tell us roughly calendar next week? Do you have any thoughts? Are we going to take a break for a while, or do you have...
We will be taking up the public finance bill as soon as the working group on the public finance bill is ready to present the bill. And we still have issues of gamblings, likely stadiums, and any other things that may be referred to the tax committee in the next 2 weeks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, committee members. Meeting adjourned.